Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Estelle Perron, welcome to Hidden Histories. We are stood at the foot of Westminster Abbey, looking over the courtyard, Dean's Yard, and there's part of the original old palace to the left, and the sun's sort of setting. It's a quite chilly November evening. It's quite atmospheric, and we're going to talk about your favourite monarch in history. You're an expert on Elizabeth I and why Westminster Abbey was so important to her throughout her reign and also after her death.
Well, thank you first for having me. Yes, Westminster Abbey was actually very important to Elizabeth. And I think in a way, much more, she was crowned there in 1559. So that's a big thing already. But also she was buried here. But what's more important as well is that it's a place very important for the relationship between Elizabeth I and Mary, not during their lifetime, but after their death, which I think is a fabulous history. So as we know, Elizabeth died on 24th March 1603 at Richmond Palace, and it was a universal mourning. People mourned her death. They were really sad about it. It was the end of an era, being ruled by such a powerful woman, and a king was about, to rule over England, James VI of Scotland, who was going to become James I of England. And what's very interesting is that she was buried, as I said, in Westminster Abbey, and she was actually led within the wooden coffin and first buried in the vault of her grandfather, King Henry VII. James at first did not attend the ceremony. He chose not to. What's very interesting as well is that, you have to imagine, and I don't know if you've been to Westminster Abbey, so now she's in a different place, obviously.
Okay, because it is for anybody who hasn't been there, Westminster Abbey houses monarchs all through the centuries. It really is. It's somewhere worth going in itself just to see the incredible two monuments that are already there. They pan all the way back from Edward I, all the way through to Edward III, Richard II, they go to Elizabeth, and beyond.
Yes, exactly. And James I erected a large, white marble monument to Elizabeth in the north aisle of Henry VII's chapel. But then some changes are going to happen, right? And I think it's important to say she had her place next to her grandfather. So we have the first Tudor monarch resting next to the last Tudor monarch. And I think it's quite very important here. I thought it was very symbolic. But James was not a Tudor. And what he's about to do is that in 1606, so 3 years after Elizabeth I's death, he transferred the Queen's coffin to a vault below the new monument and placed on top of the coffin a half-sister Mary. So he created a new monument for the two Tudor queens who actually ruled England for half a century. And I want you to remember that because, in a way, he changed the perception of monarchy. And he's not just going to stop there. What he's going to do is that he's going to put his mother, Mary Stuart, next to Henry VII. He's going to build a massive monument for her. And so if you go to Westminster Abbey, you have on the right aisle Henry VII, Mary I. And actually, Mary I is next to also Margaret Beaufort, so Henry VII's mother. And then on the north aisle and left-hand corner kind of thing, we have the two sisters. We have the two Tudor queens.
Okay, so let's backtrack a bit. So Elizabeth and Mary, there is a lot of controversy around their relationship and a lot of research around their relationship. I mean, they were rivals in many ways, but they were also cousins. You know, they were writing to each other. They were familiar with each other. Let's go back a little bit onto what their relationship was and why this move that was implicated by James VI, why that was so massive, why that had such an impact.
So you're right. So Mary and Elizabeth were rivals. However, I don't really see them as rivals, and I'm going to explain that. I think that there's a shift. I think that when Mary fled to England in 1568, she's no longer Queen of Scotland. She's no longer a queen. She cannot be the equal of Elizabeth I. So for me, there's no rivalry here. We have a prisoner and we have a queen on the throne. And though Mary didn't recognize Elizabeth's authority over her, ultimately, I'm sorry to say that, but Elizabeth had authority over Mary. Because eventually, after years and years and years of conspiracies, after two decades of conspiracies almost, Elizabeth chose to execute Mary Stuart. And I'm saying Mary Stuart because at that time, she's no longer Queen of Scots. That's one thing. Now, as you said, why Westminster Abbey is so important for these two queens? It's very important because one queen who actually ruled over England is put aside to have a bigger monument erected for her cousin, who was actually Queen of Scotland and Queen of France, but never Queen of England. She's never been crowned Queen of England. And now she's in Westminster Abbey in a big monument as a symbol of legitimacy for James.
So James VI he was King of Scotland, and then he came down to succeed Elizabeth and became James I, therefore beginning the Stuart dynasty.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how did he implement this massive move?
He had to legitimate his rule. Of course, he had right to the throne. The Stuarts also, like, come from the Tudors, ultimately. But the way he decided to do it was in 1612, he decided to take his mother's body, or what it was left of that, from Peterborough, and we'll discuss that a bit later, to Peterborough Cathedral, and to take it, like, in Westminster Abbey. As I said, he erected this massive monument about her and for her. And you can read a transcription on this monument. That is obviously in Latin, but we have the translation. Amazing. So, to God, the best and greatest, to her good memory and in eternal hope, Mary Stuart, Queen of Scots, Dowager Queen of France, daughter of James V of Scotland, sole heir and great-granddaughter of Henry VII, King of England, through his elder daughter Margaret, wife of Francis II, King of France, sure and certain heiress to the crown of England while she lived, mother of James, most puissant sovereign of Great Britain.
That's a bit of propaganda, isn't it?
It is propaganda. So he chose that. What is very interesting, James did not lift a finger to save his mother. James wanted his mother for years to recognize him as the true King of Scotland, and she refused for years. Even if she was in prison in England, she was still debating the fact that she should be Queen of Scotland. She still wanted her crown, her throne back. In a way, she was a pain in the ass for James, as much as she was for Elizabeth. When Elizabeth decided to execute Mary, she wrote a letter to James apologizing. Oh my God, I am so sorry. Don't believe, like, it was not really my intention. She was really trying to make excuses. Her letter is actually really great. He replied that he understood, that he forgave her. But when he became, you know, King of England, it was no longer a question of, was Mary Stuart, like, the real heir to the English throne? It was more like, how am I going to legitimate myself as the true heir to England, the rightful one, the more powerful one? And I'm going to show you that through my mum, I have the two houses, the Tudors, the Stuarts. I also have connections with France because she had a huge impact on France and she was a Guises. And I always say that Mary Stuart is actually much more of a Guise than she is a Stuart. So all of this was, as you said, Helen, propaganda to really legitimate his rulership over England.
Because that might, there must have been an extraordinary amount of responsibility on James's shoulders. I mean, there must have been opposition to his rule of England having come from Scotland. I mean, this was beginning a new dynasty. How did people respond to the change?
Well, actually, he was really well welcomed because people felt they were tired of being ruled by a woman. So they were very pleased that it was a man who was coming, you know, to the throne of England. However, you're right, he was still Scottish, but he agreed to come to London. He agreed to rule Scotland from London. It all started, you know, like London taking England, also like taking over, you know, their relationship with Scotland was at that time as well, when he chose to rule from London. But also, he was a Protestant king. And Elizabeth was, even despite the fact that if you look at Jesse Child's book on God's traitors, I believe that if you compare it to what was happening in Europe, Elizabeth was still relatively tolerant. And I believe that if you look at the works of Michael Kessier on Catholicism in early modern England, you see that there are lots of communities that accepted Elizabeth's rule. Okay, when people like see Elizabeth as someone very anti-Catholic and not tolerant enough, I'm like, when we really look at the evidence, I'm not really sure. And if we compare with Europe, other monarchs, I'm not really sure that is the truth here. So, but James was, you know, we're tonight with the 5th of November, we're recording tonight, and it's a gunpowder plot as well. And we're like a few feet away from the parliament as well, right? And it is quite amazing because it happened because people thought he was too anti-Catholic. So we had part of the population that felt that Elizabeth was not tolerant enough, but James was far worse than Elizabeth was towards the Catholics. So that's like when I say he was welcome because he was a man, yes, but the Catholic community feared James I of England and what was going to be his policies against Catholicism.
So just before James came down from Scotland, just before he succeeded the throne, Elizabeth died. She died in Richmond?
Yes, yeah. She died in Richmond on 24th March 1603. Her body lay at Richmond for a few days, and then it was brought by barge to Whitehall Palace. Thousands of people turned out to see her funeral procession to the Abbey on the 20th April 1603. And there was lots of weeping. It's recorded in chronicles that people were weeping, grieving for their lost queen. I think, you know, yes, she was a woman, but this idea that she was really much the mother of her country, if you look at that image that she created during her reign, this is probably how the people of London felt. They lost their English mother, they lost their queen, and the country was about to be taken over by a foreign king. You know what I mean? So it's a bit like, oh, okay, he's not really English, really. He's got Scottish, he's a bit French as well. See? And he's obviously, you know, half English, but he's not fully English like Elizabeth was. And she repeated that in all of, like, not in all, but in most of her speeches when she says, I was born in this realm. Give me another king or queen. You know, both of my parents were English. So when she did that, she differentiated herself from Mary Tudor, Mary I, who was half Spanish, half English. But she also created this feeling of belonging to a country and being the mother of this country. And I would argue, in my research, I argue that she's mother and father because she's queen and king of England.
So she was really publicly mourned in London, in England. But, you know, Mary had died previously at the agreement of Elizabeth. But how, I mean, she was a queen in her own right as well. How was her death received by the public?
That's a very interesting question because, like, so she died on 8th February 1587. And I would like to point out a few things before talking about that. First of all, on 19th December 1586, Mary wrote a letter to Elizabeth She knew that she was going to be executed, so she had one request. She wanted to be buried in holy ground in France. She didn't want to be buried in England. Elizabeth refused that request. And the English, like, I mean, it depends, like, in a way, because she was executed far away from London. There was no real impact on her death. I mean, from the English people, probably the Catholic communities, yes, but not from the, like, in the north of England, but not from the Londoners, for example. However, her death had a huge impact in France. There was a procession, there was a ceremony in France at her death on the 13th, if I'm not correct, the 13th or 14th, I think it's 13th March 1587. And there was like a huge procession, and Paris was mourning. You know, she used to be Queen of France. So they lost one of their queens and they remembered her. And so there was like, in a way, for Elizabeth, we have like mourning from Londoners, and for Mary Stuart, we have mourning from Parisians. I don't really know how her death was received in Scotland, as I said, because in a way she was such a pain in the ass for James that, I mean, and he didn't know her. I mean, honestly, like, she left, he was 1 year old. Like, he didn't know his mother. So how much can you really grieve for someone you've never met?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, actually, the fact that he never knew her. Okay, so are they actually buried next to each other, Elizabeth and
Mary? So there's one like monument for Mary with Henry VII not far. Well, Mary Grey Beaufort. And you have Henry VII in the middle, Mary and Margaret. Yeah. So the two, you know, were the two queens who gave birth, right?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And you Elizabeth. Have Mary and Elizabeth who didn't give birth. Let me say that.
Right, okay.
I think it's quite important.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So when you walk into Westminster Abbey with all of this in mind and you know the context of the burials, what really stands out for you?
Well, for me, what stands out is that you have Henry VII in the middle. On the side, on one side, you have Margaret Beaufort, so his mother, and you have Mary Stuart, James I's mother. The two women who gave birth to two dynasties all together. On the other side, you have Mary I and Elizabeth I, who didn't give birth to anyone, who didn't continue the dynasty. In so many ways, I feel a bit enraged about that for several reasons. The first one is, are we celebrating queenship through motherhood? Are we celebrating queenship through political agency, through actually ruling a country? Mary Stuart has a place in Westminster Abbey. She never ruled over England. She didn't even want to be buried here. She's in a Protestant country when she is a Catholic. And so I feel a bit, in a way, enraged, because it really shows that when you give birth to a son, when you give birth to a dynasty, you're still praised after your death. And when you don't, you have kind of like a the monument for Elizabeth and Mary is really not big. It's quite okay. I mean, it's not really impressed by it. But the monument for Mary Stuart is massive. Again, for a queen who never ruled over England. You see what I mean? Like,
but for the purposes of a man who did.
Exactly. For the purposes to establish and legitimate a dynasty that is the Stuart. for purposes like that, you're a good queen, you're a good woman if you're a good mother, and that is a bit problematic for me.
So, the ultimate question: Elizabeth and Mary's relationship in life, what was that like in comparison to their relationship in death?
It's a complicated question, because what happened is that Elizabeth tried to give advice to Mary. We have two different women. We have Mary Stuart, who was Queen of Scotland, like, after, like, I think her father died, like, 6 days or 8 days after, you know, she was born. And she was sent to France before her sixth birthday. She was a centre of attention. She was praised for her beauty. She was praised for her Catholicism. She was the she was the perfect princess, the one you wanted to marry. Elizabeth was declared bastard at the age of 3, was sexually abused by Thomas Seymour at 13, was sent at the Tower during her sister's reign, and then, out of, like, you know, a big surprise for everyone, she became Queen of England. And so we have two different fates. We have two different women, with one who felt, Mary, very much entitled, very much already in power. I mean, she received an education in France. She was at the French court. She was Queen of France. And then her husband died, Francis II died in December 1560. She was sent back to Scotland a few months after that. It was a bit of a shock for her, because there were two different courts in France and Scotland. And Elizabeth is going to advise her. Mary's never going to listen. Mary's even going to decide to get married to Henry Darnley, a cousin of Elizabeth and herself, to strengthen her claim to the throne of England. Pissing off Elizabeth massively. Because Henry Darnley is an English subject. They didn't ask for her permission, and it's not acceptable. So their relationship has always been uneven. It's always been unequal, because Mary had much more power, had much more network than Elizabeth. But Elizabeth had much more, how can I put it? I want to say intelligence, really. She knew how to play the political games. She was smarter in her choices than Mary. And Mary's just going to make different mistakes. And when Henry Darnley died, it was a bit suspicious anyway. Elizabeth wrote to Mary and said, "You really have to distance yourself from anyone involved in your late husband's death." And Mary, she was probably forced, I believe that. She was forced to marry Earl Bothwell. But regardless, I mean, she never played this kind of sisterhood. I really believe that if Mary had acknowledged Elizabeth's legitimacy to the English throne, we would have had a different dynamic between the two queens, and two most powerful queens in Europe, with Catherine of Medici in France. So three very powerful queens in Europe. And we would have had that with a dynamic of sisterhood and helping one another instead of trying to destroy one another. And Mary Stuart tried all her life to get her hands on the English throne. And she tried all her life to destroy Elizabeth.
Okay, so what about in death? So what does this monument really tell us about their relationship?
This monument, basically the fact that Mary has a bigger monument, the fact that Mary, that Elizabeth was moved, basically, she was moved to be with her sister, Mary the First of England. It shows that, in a way, it's going to hurt me to say that, but Mary Stuart won, because she is the grandmother of England. She's the grandmother of English kings and queens. She is the one who made sure that the dynasty and the monarchy survived. Elizabeth didn't, unfortunately. She chose, in a way, you know, when people say that Mary Stuart was like, she had her own heart and she followed it and she was the real woman. I believe that Elizabeth said, actually she said it, she will always be own free woman. Elizabeth chose herself before choosing her dynasty. And I think in a way it's very modern, you know. You choose yourself before choosing your duties. And for Mary, yeah, in a way, it shows that she won in terms of, like, being remembered in such a bigger monument. Well, she's never ruled England. It's quite amazing.
So that's an incentive to go to Westminster Abbey and go and show Elizabeth some of the respect that she deserves as the ruler and queen of England.
Elizabeth really loved her people, really loved her country. And I can't really say that for Mary and Scotland. So I think that it's something also to remember. Shall we always be remembered through motherhood, or shall we be remembered also for the person we are? And I think we have to remember Elizabeth for who she was. The greatest queen, monarch of England. Well, I wouldn't even want to say of the world, but, you know, it's me.
Estelle, where can everyone find you? What are you working on at the moment?
So I just finished my first monograph on Elizabeth I through Valois Eyes. Valois is the French dynasty at the same time as the Tudors. And I look at how the French, so the French ambassadors and the French rulers, so Charles IX, Henry III and Catherine of Medici, viewed Elizabeth. What were their relationship with her? So that's my first monograph. And yes, I'm also a lecturer in history. So I'm allowed to teach, so I teach at New College of the Humanities. And this is where you can find me if you need anything.
And where are you on Twitter?
Dr. Estelle Parent, or Instagram as well, it's Dr. Estelle Parent. So I'm very easy, you know.
So any positive praise of Elizabeth, look for Estelle. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and we really look forward to having you back.
Thank you so much, Helen.